It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch.
It's wrapping up. The end of the year is upon us. I guess I should say, for those who celebrate Christmas, Christmas is upon us. And having said that, I want to wish you a Black Christmas. And no, that's not any kind of political thingamadoodle. It goes like this. Look, everybody's familiar with Black Friday. And they call it Black Friday, not because it starts so early that it's still dark outside. They call it Black Friday because it's usually one of the most profitable days for the retail industry. In some cases, the Black Friday signals the time of the year where sales go up and so do profits, right? A lot of retailers start making their profits starting on Black Friday. So in business, and you guys know this, when you're in the black, you're good. You're profitable. You're making money. But if it's red, you're losing money, right? So black, good, red, bad. Well, so I'll hope that you have a Black Friday, a Black holiday, a Black Christmas, a Black Hanukkah. And what I mean by that is I hope you stay in the profit. And I'm not talking about business here. I'm talking about yourself personally not getting into a bunch of debt. And misusing, let's say, credit card or anything like that. Look, it's great to be able to give everybody on your list a gift if you can afford to do so. But if you can't afford to do it, then don't get into debt. Don't borrow. Don't take from your savings to pay for your holiday. Don't fall victim to the panic of the holiday season. So stay in the black, right? Keep it profitable. Now, I have a suggestion, and this might come across as being corny, but could you put together a mixtape? Now, I know that kind of dates me. We don't have tape anymore, but they still refer to it as a mixtape. And what do I mean is maybe put a CD together of somebody's favorite song, or a MP3 player, if you will, of somebody's favorite songs. Or maybe you put together some video clips if favorite moments through time for that person. Or you put together a CD, what do you call it, of these pictures or something. How about creating a heartfelt video, you talking to the camera, i.e. really talking to the person that you're going to deliver that video to and say, hey, I wanted to share this with you. I wanted to talk to you from my heart and tell you what a great impact you've had on my life, how special it's been having you in my life. And talk about three or four things that are really special to you about that person. You know it's going to last longer than just about any other gift. So anyway, that's all. Just hope that you have a black holiday, that you don't get into a bunch of debt, that you stay positive and profitable. And that's it. That's kind of my new thing. Black holiday, black Christmas, black Hanukkah. It's the way to go. I think that if you follow the instructions provided here too, you'll have a great time. All right. Hey, speaking of having a massive impact, I'm excited. Our guest today is Andy Cunningham. And Andy Cunningham is the founder and president of Cunningham Collective, a marketing, brand, and communication communication strategy firm dedicated to bringing innovation to the market. She's also the author of the newly released book, Get to Aha, a seminal primer about corporate positioning. Andy is a much sought after marketing expert in Silicon Valley, having been on the forefront of marketing, branding, positioning, and communicating. The next big thing, for over 30 years, she is well known for helping Steve Jobs, good old Steve Jobs, launch the Macintosh, later working with him at Next and Pixar. And you know what? There is actually, I remember Steve Jobs talking about Andy Cunningham and what an awesome person she was to work with. And let me tell you, Steve Jobs doesn't dish out, you know, compliments willy-nilly. I mean, if Steve Jobs said something good about you, you earned it. Andy Cunningham, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm excited. I'm excited to have you here. And I think that this is something that a lot of people are confused about, this thing called, you know, branding and positioning and all this stuff. So I'm glad to have you here that we can help some people out. Maybe get to their aha and start realizing what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, or how to reposition themselves. So I'm excited to have you here.
Well, thanks. It's really great to be here. Cool.
All right. Well, let's talk about this a little bit. Give us a little bit of background story. You work with the late, great Steve Jobs there. You helped launch Macintosh. And I'm sure that it was just a breeze working with Steve Jobs. I've heard that he's such an easy guy, going guy, super flexible. So give us kind of a little bit of background, how you went from working with Steve Jobs and Next and Pixar to where you're at now.
Sure. So first of all, I definitely need to say that working with Steve Jobs was an honor and a privilege. Not easy, incredibly challenging, and he wasn't particularly nice most of the time, but he was brilliant, and I learned a ton. And when he let you on his team to help him do the things he was doing to change the world, it was nothing less than a thrill and an honor and a privilege. So anyway, what happened is I was working for a public relations agency called Regis McKenna, and I ran the Apple account there, and that's when we launched the Macintosh. And then Steve got unceremoniously released from his role at Apple, if people remember that. And when he left, I decided it was a good time for me also to leave Regis McKenna and start my own company. And a couple weeks later, Steve called me and said, can you come and help me? I'm launching a new company. So I did. He was actually having a press conference in his backyard, and he asked me to come over and help. And I went over there, and I realized there were about 50 business press reporters milling around his yard. And I went into the house, and he was sitting on the floor with the people he was going to take from Apple and form his new company. And I kind of said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm going to announce to the world I'm starting this new company. I'm taking these guys with me. And I'm also going to tell people how awful Apple is and what an awful leadership role is happening there now under John Sculley. And I looked at him and I said, Steve, you can't do that. That is not the right thing to do. You're reacting emotionally, and it's a bad choice. And he sat there and thought for a minute, and then he said, okay, I won't do it, but you've got to go out there and get rid of everybody. So I went outside, and I told everybody the truth, that Steve wasn't really ready to do this. It wasn't a good idea, and they mumbled and grumbled, but they left. And then when the time was right, about a year later, we actually did do a press conference. So there you have
That's it.
That's in a nutshell what working with Steve is like.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And this is one of those moments where a leader like Steve Jobs, you know, is blessed at that moment that he listened to you, because, you know, sometimes he didn't listen. And again, I shouldn't say it like I know, just from the feedback I've had, a lot of people who have worked with Steve says that, you know, when he believed something, he was so dedicated to following through. as most leaders are, and I'm sure, Andy, you do the same thing, right? That when you believe something, hey, this is the way to go. Let's try this. Let's see where it ends. But in this case, Steve was willing to defer to your, I guess, thoughtful insight. You don't want to do this. This is not going to be good. And he said, yeah, you know what? You're probably right. Because he was reeling from being fired from his own company. It doesn't, you know, and people don't get that. People don't, I mean, and that's one of the pitfalls when you take your company public, that you can't be fired from your own company. And what's interesting about the whole Steve Jobs story is that he got fired. Apple starts to go down the crapper. They rehire him, and he immediately, dings the world with, innovation after innovation after innovation, right? I mean, the guy was nonstop. So he wasn't a fluke. He wasn't a one-hit wonder, and it's okay to be a one-hit wonder because some of us don't even get that. But, they brought him back, and the minute they brought him back, Apple was reborn again or rejuvenated. And so, and I think there's a lesson there that sometimes dealing, with somebody who's hard to deal with, like a Steve Jobs, you that's the price you pay for, for innovation. And I'm sure that the reason they brought in John Sculley, interestingly enough, John Sculley is going to be on our show, I think, sometime in January. But, you bring
great.
In somebody.
John is.
Yeah.
John is a great guy. So he'll be a wonderful guest.
Yeah. And so, you look at somebody like, let's say, John Sculley, which I've never met. But what I heard is that he's a pretty decent guy. And he's, he does have, I guess, a more rounded social skills. Right. He's a more, you know what I'm talking about, as opposed to. Again, Steve, who just didn't have time for people. He didn't understand people, it seemed like, right? That's the way it's portrayed. But he understood his customers. He understood what Apple was about. I mean, Steve Jobs and Apple, that was probably, one of those things that were destined to happen, right? It was destiny. And anyway, so I think that sometimes you just got to leave destiny alone.
Steve, actually, I want to disagree with one thing you said, which is that Steve didn't understand people. Steve understood people extraordinarily well. His emotional intelligence was super high. But here's the thing. He used people as tools to do what he wanted to do, which was change the world and build these products. And if you couldn't help him change the world, then he was not interested in working with you. But he knew how to make you do that. He knew how to stretch you well beyond what you thought your limits were and make you better at what you do. And if you were helpful to him, that was a great thing. And if you weren't, you were dismissed immediately. And sometimes you got dismissed several times in that cycle.
That's right. Now let me ask you this. Were you ever fired by Steve Jobs?
I was fired by Steve Jobs about, I think, 5 times. I'm pretty sure it was around 5 times. Time I was really devastated, but I got used to it.
That's funny. Because I believe I read that he fired you, and and I think at that point he, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think he fired you, and there was still like a bill due, basically. You sat down with Steve and kind of told him, hey, this is the deal. I think you earned his respect and he rehired you. Is that correct?
That is true. Yes, he owed me about $35,000 when he fired me. This was after he formed Next and after I had formed my agency. So I basically I needed the money. I had to make payroll. I had, four or five people working for me and I had to make payroll. And when he said he wasn't going to pay me because he thought the work was not good enough, I was, of course, devastated. So I went home and I called my mentor, Regis McKenna, and I said, who had an incredible relationship with Steve. And he said, if you're going to get that money, you have to have something over Steve. And I said, well, what in the world do I have over Steve Jobs? And he said, you have one thing, and that's your relationships with the business press. And I said, ah, I get it. So I got myself an appointment with Steve. I sat down with him, and I said, Steve, you owe me $35,000. I need the money. Please pay me. And I never expected him to rehire me, but I said, I want you to pay me. And he said, I'm not going to pay you. The work you did wasn't good enough. And I said, you know, Steve, currently, now that I'm no longer working with you, I get about 35 or 40 phone calls a week from business press reporters asking me what kind of a guy you are to work with. And I currently tell them very nice things. That's all I said. And he turned around, got a checkbook, wrote me a check, and then rehired me a few days later. So,
you know, and to me, this is such an interesting dynamic. And I see this sometimes, you know, some of my best friends, including my dear wife, we've had the biggest arguments with, right? I think that if my wife could have, she probably would have fired me multiple times. You know, and let me tell you, I have a dear friend. Him and I had this big drag out business relationship, and you know what? I even sued him. Oh, I take that back. I threatened to sue him, and his wife got a hold of the letter, and she said, you know, you guys work this out, or I'm going to kick both you guys' butts. And my point being is sometimes, you know, just because you've been fired or just because you disagree immensely about something doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of the relationship. Meaning sometimes maybe that relationship's going to go to the next level. There's going to be some kind of evolution there. But it's kind of interesting that he fired you and then hired you back. And why do you think he hired you back? Well, talk about that. Did he call you up and say, hey, Andy, so talk about why he hired you back the first time.
Sure. So because he needed me for what he was doing at the time. And that's really the reason he hired anybody, is that he needed them. And I was his communication person. I was the person that was helping him with messaging and helping him to, get his story out in the world. And he needed it. And I think there for a little while, he may have thought he didn't need it, but he did need it. So I got welcomed back in. And every time he welcomed me back in, it wasn't like, oh, gee, I'm really sorry I fired you. It was as if it had never happened. It was, Andy, there's this great opportunity. We got this happening and that happening. And you got to come and do this. So
that's funny.
He was very funny guy. Yeah. But he taught me a lot about marketing and positioning, which is what my book is about, Get to Aha. And he was just an incredible influence on my life. And there's a lot of little tidbits of Steve in that book. So it was fun writing it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so that, I remember reading that and I'm thinking that is just a great story. And like you said, I think he fired a lot of people, and maybe he used that as a tool, as a way of waking people up. What's his name? Kawasaki. What's his name?
Yes, Guy Kawasaki.
Guy Kawasaki talked about Steve, kind of like what you said, that Steve was able to get people to do their very, very best work. And a lot of people maybe didn't like the way Steve got him there, but they all respected him and they all loved him because without his crazy high standard, they would not have been, they never would have reached that level in, you know, that they reached.
Yes, absolutely. He believed in you, and that there's nothing that feels better than that, right? Than having somebody that you're working with believe in you, and that enabled you to free yourself up to do better, more, better, more, better, more, and that's what it was like working with him. People achieved things they never thought possible, and Steve demanded things that were not possible. he always demanded things that weren't possible, and you, if you worked with him, you made them possible. So we all look at Steve and we think, wow, this is a guy that really, really was able to make the impossible possible, and we were part of it. And so, as I said, all of us that were there were just in awe of him and loved him. We loved him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And I think that looking back at some of my favorite relationships, there were people like Steve who demanded more, expected more, believed in you, and therefore you did some of your best work. And it's something that, you know, too bad that he didn't write a book on how he did that. Anyway, so let's talk about, here you are, your best-selling book, Get to Aha. Let's talk first about why write this book on positioning and branding. There's obviously a few of them out there. Why write Get to Aha?
Well, the notion of branding is a very misunderstood concept in the world. You know, branding, people, a lot of people don't realize this, but the word branding came from how people identify their livestock, right? They put their ranch brand, they burn it into the rear end of a cow or another piece of livestock, and that's where the word branding came from. So it went from that to then meaning creating a logo for a company, a brand for a company, and then from that it meant to be the experience that people have with a company, and now companies are often referred to as brands. So the word has grown dramatically over the 100 or so years that it has, 200 years that it's been in existence. But brand, a company's brand is made up of what I like to think of as a rational side and an emotional side, just like humans. So in my book, I treat companies very much like people, and there's a rational side to people and to companies, and there's an emotional side. The rational side is the side that is the intellectual piece of the company or the person, and that's what positioning is. Positioning is the art and the science of articulating your role and relevance in the market at a given time. And that's very rational. And then there's an emotional component to that, which is not only what is your role and your relevance at a particular time, but it is what is the emotional appeal that this company is trying to make to its customer. So is it a sense of well-being? Is it a sense of peace? Is it a sense of urgency? Well, in the case of Apple, when I was working with Steve Jobs, it was this idea of belonging to a cult, right? To a special cult of people who understood the Macintosh, had a relationship with Macintosh, and built a relationship with that company. So the rational side was one thing, and the emotional side is another. So this book is primarily about creating the rational side. Because if you don't have the rational side done first, if you don't intellectually understand who you are and why you matter, it's very difficult to put the emotion on top of that. So this book is a new framework that I developed about 15 years ago about the practice of positioning, and it tells people how to do it themselves. And there's a test. It's all around your corporate DNA. The main focus of it is understanding what your DNA is. Like I said, I treat companies like people. If you understand your corporate DNA, and there's three kinds, there are customer-oriented companies, which are mothers, product-oriented companies, which are mechanics, and concept-oriented companies, which I call missionaries. And if you understand which one of those you are by taking the test in the book, you actually can develop a much more authentic marketing plan, and then you'll have a much better window into that emotional side that you have to create for your appeal to your customers. There's a long way of saying what it's about, but it's a new framework for this art and science of positioning.
I like it. And so when you look back at, let's say, Apple, you know, what was Apple's DNA?
So Apple was clearly what I call a missionary under Steve Jobs, for sure. And missionaries are companies that exist to change change behavior, human behavior, on a fundamental level. They really are trying to bring the next big thing into the world. There aren't very many of these, but a couple of them that come to mind, FedEx in the older days, Starbucks, another one, Tesla is another one, and Apple for sure was one. When Steve died, the missionary status started to shift because there really wasn't someone like Steve there to replace Steve. So what's happening to Apple is it is turning into what I call a mechanic company, more of a product-oriented company under Tim Cook's leadership. Tim is a real great operator. He's a great steward of the assets that he has left, but he is not a cult of personality, and he is not someone who brings innovation after innovation after innovation. So the company is moving from a missionary to a mechanic. So that's what's happening to Apple. And I contrast that with what's happening at Amazon. Amazon started out as a mechanic, as a product-oriented company, and Jeff Bezos is actually very purposefully navigating that company now into motherhood. So if you look at Amazon's mission statement today, they want to be Earth's most customer-centric company. And
yes.
people seem to know that they recently, not recently, but in the last few years, bought Zappos. And it's not because Amazon couldn't figure out how to sell shoes online. It's because Amazon wanted that incredible customer experience mentality that Zappos brought to them. They wanted to infuse the Amazon culture with this customer centricity. So Amazon and Jeff are purposefully moving into motherhood territory, whereas at Apple, it's happening to Apple. Tim is not navigating the company there, but it is becoming a product or a mechanic-oriented company.
Right, and I think that people see that, right? Again, not that cutting not that he, like you said, he's a great operator. He's going to take care of the company, but an operator is different from an innovator. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see what happens. In the next 5 years with the change in thinking there. All right, so you know that's I think a great take on branding. And so if I'm brand X, right, and does that automatically give me my position? I mean, talk about, you know, give me your definition of positioning versus branding, or,
sure.
or maybe just give me your definition of positioning.
Sure. So interestingly, this concept of positioning was actually invented in the 1970s by two guys named Jack Trout and Al Reese. And how they define it, and this is still a very good definition, and they wrote a book about it too, by the way. It was called Positioning, The Battle for Your Mind is the name of their book. And how they defined it is they said it is creating real estate in the mind of the prospect of what you're of a customer, right? You're trying to own a space in the head of that for that customer so that they know who you are, why you matter, why they might want to buy you, why they might want to affiliate with you, all of that stuff. So that's really important that's what positioning is all about. It's a place on a map. It's a unique place on the map in the brain of the customer. And that, as I said, that's still a very, very good definition of that word today. So that's really what positioning is.
And I like that. And people have, when people think of FedEx, since you brought up FedEx, when people think of FedEx, they think of something different than when they think of United Parcel, UPS, right? Because when I want to ship something via ground, even though FedEx now does ground, I'm sorry, UPS in my mind equals ground shipping, right? If I want something delivered overnight, even though we know that UPS can now deliver things overnight, I FedEx it. And I want it
and
delivered.
By the way,
go ahead.
You use that as a verb, right? FedEx has become a verb, which is the ultimate in creating a brand, right?
It is, but you know what? It's kind of funny too because when you say FedEx it, you are telling people that you want to overnight it, but you don't necessarily care if they use FedEx or if they use something else, but you want it overnight it. So it does. It's one of those weird things that it is a great, what do you call it, a great thing to become the verb to represent the entire category of overnight express. Hey, you FedEx that. Whether you use FedEx, whether you use something else, I don't care. Just get it overnighted. So I think it's a great position to be in, so I even hear my kids, they'll say an iPod, referring to an MP3 player. You know, what kind of iPod do you have? Oh, I have a Sony iPod, you know, and it's so, you know,
it's kind of
go ahead. Yeah.
Or the famous one is Kleenex. Kleenex is the famous example of this. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, all right. So and you probably have heard this, and so I'm going to just ask you this question because I want to help our listeners understand that sometimes not having a solid, let me rephrase that, a narrow positioning statement or brand statement or whatever you want to call it can really hurt them because, you know, a lot of people, especially when they're starting up, right? I have a customer I'm dealing with now, and I want him to identify his ideal customer, and he keeps coming back to me, well, I can help everybody. I said, you might be able to help everybody, but you can't market to everybody unless you have billions of dollars stashed away someplace, and even then I wouldn't want to start that way. So, you know, a lot of people will hear you, you know, will hear us talk about, you know, focusing down or niching down or you know, people in their mind think I'm going to be restricting my sales if I make my position too small, but that's not true. Talk about that.
Right. So that is the famous ATTAP positioning statement, which stands for all things to all people. And that is what everybody wants. They wake up in the morning and they want their product or their service to be all things to all people. But nothing can be all things to all people. In fact, if you try to do that, you suddenly become nothing to no one. So the idea is in marketing is to drop the pebble in the water and capture that first ring of customers, right? The first group of people that are going to be really passionate about your product or your service and really love it. In the technology world, we call those early adopters. So if you get the early adopters early on and make them fall in love with you, then you can use them to co-opt the next ring, you know, the next ripple and the next one after that. So every company that has been successful, every one of them, including Facebook, starts with the first ripple around the pebble that gets dropped in the water, not with the last ripple.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm glad you brought up Facebook because if you look at the Facebook timeline, a little pun there for those who know, or, you know, anyway, so if you look at Facebook originally, when it was first launched, was just this way of staying in touch with, kids in college, and it started at
Harvard. It started at
Harvard. That's right.
It wasn't just
kids. That's right.
Right. It wasn't just kids. It wasn't just kids in college. It was kids at Harvard, and then it became kids at Ivy League schools, and then it became kids at college. Those were all the ripples that it went through, and you know, until it finally became for everybody. But yes, that's what it started off with, a very small group of early adopters that were right around Mark Zuckerberg and his experience at Harvard.
Yes, and so I'm glad you – that's right. And so it started with this very narrow focus, and it expanded as their position changed, as their – you know, as their idea of what the company could be changed, right? Because, again, and this is what I want people to understand, there are some people who love Facebook, and when they hear the word social media, Facebook is what's top of mind, where there's some people who love Twitter – and that is what represents social media to them. And there's some people who now love Instagram and they do nothing but Instagram. And of course, there are some people who do all of those things. But, you know, and again, I'm bringing this up because, you know, just because you're in a competitive marketing space, this idea, like you said, of trying to be all things to all people leaves you lonely and broke. Again, one of my favorite places to look at is the pizza industry, because you have Domino's. For years, Domino's, what do you call it? Their what was their position? Hey, fresh pizza in 30 minutes, something like that, right? That was kind of what they were all about.
That's their position. Yep, that was their position.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
And so, and then of course now we have Papa John's, who I guess their position would be what? Better ingredients, better pizza.
Yeah, I'm not a Papa John's person, so I don't actually know too much about them. But I've heard of them. I don't think I've ever even eaten their pizza, but yeah, the pizza goes you know, better and better and faster and fresher and fresher. But they really don't have, in my opinion, at least I'm unaware of, a very unique position statement for Papa John's. I'm not quite sure what that would be.
Yeah, well, and I don't think they have a really good one, because better ingredients, better pizza, to me, is kind of vague.
Right, kind of vague.
Yeah, as opposed to if they would have said maybe the best ingredients equals the best pizza, might have been a little bit better. You know, when you start using, you know, because that's a little bit more definite than, you know, than the word better ingredients, better pizza.
Right.
The best ingredients,
so
better.
Yeah, it's supposed to differentiate you, right? It's supposed to show how your position statement is supposed to show how you are different from your competition. And maybe they are, in fact, better, but that is a very vague statement. I don't think that's a great one.
Yeah. So, you know, the guys who are probably listening in from Papa John's right now, we just saved you millions of dollars, probably, you know, in revenue. And, you know, so you're welcome. All right. All right, so let's talk about this.
Go ahead. They can buy the book. They can buy the book and figure out how to adjust their positioning statement on their own.
That's right. That's right. So buy the book, Getting to AHA. Let's see. Yeah, Get to AHA. I'm sorry. Get to AHA.
Get to AHA.
Get to AHA by Andy Cunningham. And you can find the book at Amazon. Also, for our good folks who are listening, and maybe you don't have the moment to write it down, fear not. We're going to put this up in the show notes. We'll have a link so you can get to AHA from the show notes. And so don't worry. We're going to help. We're going to help you get to AHA by actually getting the book. So all right. So let's talk about this. I want you to clarify this so people are not lost. I want to be. Sometimes I like to be. Over obvious, for lack of better terms. I want to be obvious. And so why don't you kind of give me your opinion and kind of tie the relationship between positioning and branding. You know, aren't they the same? What's the difference? Talk about this.
Sure. So positioning is, as I said before, there's a yin and a yang to every person and every company. And the yin is the rational side, and the yang is the emotional side. So positioning to me is the rational side. It answers those two simple questions. Who are you and why do you matter? And by the way, this works for human beings too, who also seek to brand themselves. But the left side, you know, is the rational side, the positioning side. And then the right side is the yang or the emotional side or what I also call the branding side. So positioning and branding work hand in hand to create a whole that is greater than the sum of the two parts or the identity of either a company or a person.
Okay, say that one more time.
I said, okay, positioning and branding are the yin and the yang of a company's identity. The yin, the positioning side, is the rational side. The yang is the emotional side or the branding side. And the two together, just like any yin and yang, the sum is greater than the parts,
right.
And they form a complete identity that includes the rational and the emotional. So the rational answers the question, who are you and why do you matter? And the emotional answers the question, what is that emotional appeal that this product or service is trying to elicit from its customers? Because you can't sell anything, by the way. Can't sell anything without an emotional appeal of some kind or other to the customer. The customer has to get something emotionally and rationally out of everything that they buy. So you have to supply that for them.
Yeah, I like that. I hope everybody picked that up. That to me is a priceless nugget there. You have to have this emotional appeal. Maybe it's peace of mind. If you're selling insurance or selling financial products, you're delivering peace of mind. If you're selling security systems, maybe again, you're delivering peace of mind or security or safety is the emotional appeal. Go ahead.
Disney delivers happiness. That's what Disney's
yes.
all about. Security companies deliver security or safety. The Volvo delivers safety, right? These brands have these things they stand for, and that's the emotional appeal. But there's also a rational appeal, which is why buy a Volvo? Emotional appeal is the safety.
Yes.
Well, it's time tested. It's been around forever. It's well designed. It's a family. You know, there's a whole lot of other things that go into that.
Absolutely. let me ask you this. How did you come up with this framework, you know, regarding the DNA? Because I really like the fact that you gave it this DNA framework. So talk about this. How did you come up with this idea?
Sure. So I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of companies, and I had a client ask me, how are you going to tell me what my positioning statement is? Tell me the process you're going to go through. And I said, well, I'm just going to go into a room and I'm going to, you know, figure it out after reading a bunch of customer interviews and talking to you guys. And he said, I don't understand that. I really want to know what are the steps you're going to take to get me to this positioning statement. So I went into my office for a very cold and rainy weekend in Palo Alto, California, and I reverse engineered how I came up with companies' positioning statements. You know, when you're good at something, you just do it. You don't think about all the steps involved. And, you know, if you're Steph Curry and you're a basketball player, you might not be thinking about every tiny little step that takes you to do the kind of shooting he does. But if you're going to try to explain it to someone else, you really do have to reverse engineer it and know what those steps are. So I went through that process, and I realized the very first thing I do when I help companies come to their positioning statement is I try to categorize them into a certain kind of company so that I know what I'm working with. So I examined all the companies I worked with, and I discovered there are really only three kinds of companies. And I tried to find a fourth, and I really couldn't. And those were product-oriented companies, customer-oriented companies, and concept-oriented companies. And the reason that I categorized them that way is because they actually behave very differently. They organize themselves differently. They measure success differently. They hire people differently. They compensate them differently. They talk about different things in meetings. They actually run differently. And so I realized that once you understand how a company is organized, if, say, they're organized around an incredible customer experience like Disney is, then you can create a much more authentic positioning statement for them if you know that. So the human analogy of this is, I like to say, with your own DNA, and now we can all do this with 23andMe and all the rest of these incredible DNA things, if you know what you're made of, you can make something of it, and that's the idea.
Oh, I like that. When you know what you're made of, you can make some. Was that make something of it?
Yes. When you know what you're made of, you can make something of it. So when companies know their DNA, they can make something of it. It can become a feature. Same with a human. When you know you're an amazing basketball shooter, you can make something of it, right?
Yes.
But if you don't know that, you can't leverage that asset. So it's all about leveraging what you're good at, whether you're a human or whether you're a company.
Absolutely. You know, first of all, I hope it's okay to talk about this, but you have a unique office/home
yes,
called Sea Dog. And so why don't you tell people a little bit about your home/office?
Oh, that's funny. Yes. So my husband and I live on a boat. We live on a 1932 wooden motor yacht that was, it's a Stevens, for those of you who know boats, and it's fully restored. And we became empty nesters a year ago. Our kids went off to do their own thing, and we decided to do something kind of crazy. So my husband's always been into boating and sailing and flying, and so we decided that we would give it a shot, and we now live in the Sausalito Yacht Harbor. On a 1932 wooden motor yacht.
You know, and I think this is such a cool thing because, being empty nesters, you know, you have that flexibility. And second of all, it's a nice way of telling your kids, come and visit, but you can't stay. We don't have any room for you.
Good point. Although they both came back for the holidays. So my daughter and her boyfriend and my son, all of us were staying on the boat for about four nights. It was a little tight.
Oh, that's going to be. Yeah, it is. But it's still kind of cool. Hey, what'd you do for Christmas?
Yeah.
I was on a boat. I was
Absolutely,
on an old wooden
yeah.
yacht. So that's kind of a neat little thing. You know what? And I'm kind of a movie buff, so I hope you don't mind this little segue. But, you know, there is – every time I talk about positioning and branding and marketing, I always think about this movie called Crazy People. I don't know if you ever remember this movie. It was Dudley Moore and I think Daryl Hannah – and it's basically, it's an ad executive who has a mental breakdown, Dudley Moore, and he's put away in a facility to help him overcome his breakdown or whatever. And in the movie, the he befriends some of the people in the facility, and they find out that he's an ad executive. And bottom line is, you know, they basically they convince him. The whole movie is about, you know, him trying to be more truthful in his advertising and in his branding, right? So there's a really funny kind of moment quote that I remember from the movie where they're talking about Bovol, and you know, they say, "Hey, buy a Bovol. They're boxy, but they're good. And we know they're not sexy, but in today's world, this is not a smart time to be sexy." Anyway.
That's funny. I did not see that movie. I haven't seen that movie, yeah. But that sounds like a good one.
Yeah, it's a fun way. To me, it's a kind of a fun way to learn about branding and positioning, because really, Bovol, they're not known for sexy. They are known for being boxy,
no.
But they're also known for being safe. And they're a great car.
Exactly.
And so back to having that emotional appeal and knowing what you stand for, that is what a good brand will let you do.
Exactly.
All right.
And so you think about a Ferrari, right? A Ferrari is
yes.
a sexy car, and that's a whole different ball of wax, right? Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. Ferrari is a sexy car. It's a whole different ball of wax. And you know what? And I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, if you look at why somebody's going to buy a Ferrari versus a Ford, they both have, you know, you can buy a two-door Ford, and Ferraris are two-door. You're going to spend, what, $150,000, $200,000 for a Ferrari. You're going to spend, let's say, $30,000 to $50,000 for a nice two-door Ford. They're going to have a lot of the same features, and they're going to get you from point A to point B. The difference is they deliver a completely emotional experience, and that's why some
right.
people are going to pay $150,000, $200,000 for a Ferrari, and some people are going to say, I'm going to stay with a Ford because they're looking for that emotional experience. And so people sometimes forget about that. And so I'm so glad that you brought this thing up between the yin and the yang, the rational and the irrational side. It's so important. Everybody, whether you like it or not, you're delivering this emotional experience to your customer. So I think that's such a great takeaway today.
Exactly. And I just want to add one more thing to that. You wouldn't have that emotional high with a Ferrari if the rational side weren't there. In other words, if the car didn't go really, really fast, if the car didn't work really well and didn't go really fast, you couldn't deliver that emotional, sexy experience. So they have to go together.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, yeah, I'm so glad you nailed it that way. That's absolutely perfect. All right, so the book, again, is Get to Aha. I am with the author today, Andy Cunningham. Andy, if you guys are just joining us, she worked with people like Steve Jobs. She helped launch the Macintosh, later worked with Pixar and Next, and she has worked with a slew of other CEOs and CFOs and CMOs and all sorts of different marketing brands out there. And again, the book is called Get to Aha, and it's all about branding and positioning yourself in a really loud, noisy, crowded marketplace. And what's interesting to me, Andy, is that we sometimes don't observe what's happening, but we see this all the time where you'll see a company that is in a very crowded marketplace, but yet they stand out. And the reason they stand out is because they have this branding position, this emotional statement so well articulated that they stand out easily.
Yep, that's exactly right. And you got to know what that is. You got to know what the rational side is so that you can build the emotional on top of it. So in other words, if you're building a Ferrari, you got to know that the Ferrari is going to work really well and it's going to be really fast. And then once you have that, then you can start building the brand on top of it. And in the case of Ferrari, that became the emotional attachment of, you know, macho and speed and power and all those other things. But it started with the rational side of a really great car that went really fast.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this real quick. Because of your experience with Silicon Valley, I want to talk about, get your thoughts on this anyway. What do you think is particularly critical for tech companies to understand about their DNA?
Well, I think any company really needs to understand, is it really customer-oriented, is it really product-oriented, or is it really out there to change the behavior of humans? And once you know that, you know, and again, in the words of my book, are you a mother, are you a mechanic, or are you a missionary? Once you know what you are, okay, this is my little statement I said before, once you know what you are, you can make something of it. So if you happen to be a customer-oriented company, now you can leverage the heck out of that and really position yourself around this idea that we are much more customer-friendly. For example, you had the pizza example a while ago. Wouldn't it be interesting if Papa John's were a mother, if they were real customer-focused, and their positioning was around the most customer-centric pizza company on the planet, right? That's an interesting way to position themselves. It's a,
yes.
As opposed to the way they have positioned themselves, like a mechanic, right? We have better ingredients, better pizza. Okay, that's very product-oriented, not very customer-service-oriented. And there are plenty of pizza companies that are product-oriented, but if they decided they were customer-centric, they could differentiate themselves in the market by being the most customer-centric pizza. Like, you make your own pizza. You decide what you want, how it's cooked, all that stuff. They could alter the company around that positioning statement.
Yeah. And again, this is so vitally important for our listeners. Guys, if you've been struggling maybe marketing your business, maybe if you're not really sure, I'm going to urge you to get the book, Aha! Get to Aha, because it's going to help you understand your branding or your marketing DNA, whatever you want to call that, your DNA, and then you can start figuring out your position. Because once you figure this out, everything falls into place. And
it does.
Sometimes it's okay. Once you understand who you are, what you do, what you're about, then it's okay to, you know, you're going to repel some customers is what I was going to say, and that's okay. But you're going to also attract the right kind of customers that you want to work with, and that's even better. Because let me tell you, once people understand who you are and what you deliver, what you're about, the emotional experience that they're going to get from your brand, then to me, life becomes easier, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's back to that thing. Know what you're made of so you can make something of it. you got to start with understanding who you are. Whether you're a person looking for a new job or whether you're a company trying to sell a product, you got to know who you are at your core, and then you can make something of it, you know? And that it just makes marketing a whole lot easier when you do.
Yeah, I'm going to type this in. Know who you are. So how do you say that? Know who you are.
Yeah, know what you're made of. Know what you're made of.
Know what you're made of so you can make something of it.
Right. Yep. It's good advice for humans as well as companies.
it really is. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I love this idea of assigning a DNA to your company. I think that it makes it easier to define, you know, who you are, what you do.
I
love it.
Exactly. And then explain it to other people. It's a lot easier when you're, you know, people in today's world, we are very attuned with the internet to be sensitive to authenticity and genuineness. This wasn't always the case, but today it is. And so when you try to market yourself as something you're not, you know, an example I like to give is Comcast. Comcast is trying very hard to market itself as a customer-centric company. And it's just plain clear that they're not.
Right.
Those kinds of things are the things that you can avoid if you understand what your DNA is. You can leverage the good stuff of your DNA, and then you can maybe work on the things that are a little bit less good. But you can't go out there and market yourself as something you're not.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's talk about this because when you make that positioning statement that we are the most centric company in the world, taking paraphrasing Amazon. Let me tell you, Amazon delivered something to me the other day. It was the wrong one. The lady said, you know, she said, you know what, we apologize. Let me see if I can get it out to you today, which is, first of all, crazy that they can do that. You know, I'm sorry, Mr. Martinez, I can't get it out to you today. I can have it to you tomorrow, and I apologize. And I said, okay, so what do I do with this other thing that, you know, what do I do with the wrong thing? She goes, well, I tell you what, you can keep it and donate it. You can keep it and gift it. You can keep it and use it, or you can return it. What would you like to do? Yeah. I said, well, you know what? It's not so much that I want to keep it, but I don't want to hassle of, you know, boxing it and going down and dealing with UPS. So I'll see if one of my kids want it. No problem. Thank you. And so that's it.
Well, there
that
you go.
That is customer centric. That is like,
that
wow.
That is customer. Absolutely. That is totally customer centric. And they are working very hard to get that in their culture everywhere at Amazon. Because that's what they want.
Yeah.
They want to be your go-to place for shopping for everything, whether it's shoes or clothing or parts to something or pharmaceuticals or food now, right? All of this stuff.
Yeah.
They want to be
all
your go-to place. Yep.
And here's and this is what I want to throw out here, Andy, is what's interesting to me is you look at Comcast or Cox, I'm sorry, who, by the way, delivers everything digitally. And you think when you're delivering something digitally, you can definitely make it a lot easier on your customers. I mean, if Amazon, who's delivering something physically, can make it that easy for their customers, you know, if you're a digital company, you have no excuse.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's all instantaneous. Yep.
Yeah.
So they should be able to do it. Especially if they're going to say that they do it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you don't have to make it, that hard on people. All right. Andy, the book again is Get to Aha. Get to Aha. It's available at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. It's also going to be available on the show notes. I will put a link here, or my team will put a link here, so you guys can just read the show notes and then click if you want to go to the book. And really, I hope that you guys have taken this away. There are so many things here that Andy shared that, again, you can get more information from her book. Putting together your DNA, I think, is just so powerful. Really getting down and spending time figuring out what your positioning statement is, this, to me, is so critical. Because, again, if you're a doctor, if you're a lawyer, a plumber, there are so many people, there are so many options of people to choose from, that the easier you make it for your people, the better it's going to be. You want to stand out in their mind. You want to have an emotional experience, connection with your people. This is going to help. And then, of course, we talked about defining your brand, defining your position, and why that's important to companies. There is just so much that we talked about, so I hope you guys will review this over and over again as you sit down with your people and start figuring out what you're going to do with your company or companies. Again, the book is Get to Aha, the author, Andy Cunningham. Andy Cunningham, I want to say thank you so much for stopping by today and sharing.
Hey, thank you so much, Bert. It was a real pleasure to be on your show. You.
All righty. You bet. Good stuff there from bestselling author Andy Cunningham. Used to work with Steve Jobs and some other big companies, and I think that she can help you decide what your company stands for, right? Who got served. And it's so important. I love this idea of figuring out who are you and why do you matter? Figuring out your DNA is so important. There's just so much good stuff in this interview. I hope you'll review it a couple of times. You'll share it with the people that you care about. Share it with the people that you know who are running a business, a department, or trying to market their company. This is going to help them a lot. As always, thank you so much for stopping by. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.